5 o'clock on this Thursday. Hey, don't forget, by the way, tomorrow, with all the changes that we've had here at the station, we are now the new home of the Steve Keim Show, the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals. There's a lot to talk to Steve this week about, including and especially Chandler Jones yesterday, who basically said, yeah, I asked for a trade. I don't really want to talk much more about it. Go talk to Steve. Okay. We'll talk to Steve about it tomorrow, see what he has to say. I don't know if he's going to add much to the conversation. But at 3 o'clock tomorrow.
We'll ask Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. The general manager, Steve Keim,
what did
be,
you, yeah.
What happened?
What was your reaction when Chandler Jones asked you to be traded?
Yeah. And what urgency is there now to get something done with the performance that he had? And we'll see what he does on Sunday. So every Friday, 3 o'clock, Steve Keim, general manager of the Arizona Cardinals. And it's new to us. We for the longest time, he was a regular guest on the morning show. But with all the changes and everything, he now is on our show every week. So that's coming up tomorrow at 3 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show, and we very much look forward to that. This is J.J. Watt from earlier today. They call it the Megawatt Formation, and we all saw it against the Titans. It's Kyler Murray, and there was J.J. Watt and Lecky Fotu in the backfield with him. And, of course, the thing was a total deke. It was just a fake out. Never went to J.J. Watt. Never even went to that side of the field. Kyler Murray just kind of trotted in. J.J. Watt admitted today, I had no idea what was going on behind me on that play.
I said it. I was mic'd up, and I think they caught it where they said I didn't know where the play was going. That's not a joke. I did not know where the play was going. Like we put the play in, and it was kind of like a throwaway conversation. Like, hey, we're gonna have Megawatt in this week. You'll line up in the backfield and go here. And I said okay. And we walked through it one single time with me and Lecky all week. But I didn't, even in the walkthrough, I was just focused on what we were doing. I wasn't 100% sure where the ball went. And then I went to block the guy, and he wasn't even trying to get me. So I was like, all right, the ball's probably not here. And I looked on the Jumbotron, and Kyler was in the end zone. I was like, all right, it's fine. It works for me. I don't care. I don't care what happens. I was going to block whoever I was supposed to block.
I would have called it the Mega Fotu Formation. That guy's like 340 pounds. I mean, Lecky Fotu. Big boy, Lecky Fotu.
Megawatt rolls off the tongue a
it
little
does,
bit.
It does.
Then Mega Fotu, you know.
Like Megatron.
Yeah.
Megawatt.
Know. Yeah. Something like, exactly. Something
yeah,
like
Mega
that.
Fotu doesn't really roll off the tongue. It sounds stupid.
Lecky Watt. You could call it the Lecky Watt play. But again, that doesn't. Megawatt. That's, you know, it's.
Yeah, two big, gigantic guys out there. And you're, you know, and it confused the defense that they didn't know. And it's a, you know, it's a. Well, what was the score in the game when they used that? Do you remember?
I don't. I can find out for you.
Yeah.
You talk for a minute, and I'll go tell you
well,
exactly
because,
what
it was. You know, there's probably different formations. There are times you may run it, and you might have those guys block. And, you know, I don't know if we'll see that again. I'm not sure if we will. Like, there's only so many tricks that you have, and, you know, you want to make sure you save it for the right situation.
That made it 24-6
okay,
with under 2 minutes to go in
all
the
right,
first
so it was
half.
A good time to use it. It was a good time. It wasn't – the game wasn't out of hand. It was a good time to use it. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
You're not going to use that later in the game when you're up by three scores. Hey, let me show you what I have here. That's something like, let's bring this on him and make sure we get in the end zone. I love that they got in the end zone 4 out of 5 times in the red zone. I mean, I love that they 4 out of 5 times they were successful in the red zone. And, you know, I'm sure that Cliff's got a bunch of plays, you know, as far as things that he can call in situations like that to confuse the defense.
J.J. Watt, the reason we're playing sound from J.J. Watt, he met with the media today, and it was a very solid debut for him in a Cardinals uniform. Statistically, he didn't do a ton that popped, certainly not the way Chandler Jones did, but there is this belief now that Chandler Jones will get a ton of attention paid to him because of what he did, and that might free up J.J. Watt to have a statistically big game. He still contributed. And early in that game, I think in establishing their presence against Derrick Henry, in establishing their presence in the backfield of the Titans, I thought J.J. Watt was all over the place. I remember seeing him distinctly making plays early in that game, 2, 3, 4 times in the first quarter of that game. And I do think his presence might have freed up Chandler Jones a little bit because they had to account for both of those guys.
I don't think there's any question that they're going to help each other. For J.J., it's about winning, and I'm sure he wants to put up numbers and everything, and I'm sure he's looking at Chandler Jones, and I don't know if I don't know if J.J.'s capable of a game like that, the way Chandler just dominated that football game, but J.J.'s going to get his. I'm not really worried about it. He's here for 2 years. He's, you know, I think he's going to help them quite a bit. His presence is certainly going to help. You got to be aware of him because guys like that, even as they get older, they're still very capable of having monster games. They may not be, he may not be great consistently over 16, 17 games, but there are going to be games that he plays extremely well.
It's a home opener, and it's his first in a Cardinals uniform. That's got him fired up, too.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. Obviously, we got a little bit of a taste in preseason, but still, I don't think we've seen the full stadium rocking and the Red Sea going crazy. So I personally can't wait for that. I know they didn't have last season, obviously, to show their love for this team, and I can't wait to see it because I'm really looking forward to it. I love this stadium. I've loved the times I've played it in the past. I love, obviously, our guys and our team, and I think that our fans are going to be ready to rock on Sunday. It's going to be a lot of fun.
You know, something else I'll be curious to see, too, we talked a lot about his snap counts going into the season opener. I think he was on the field about 74% of the time.
Yeah.
But because it was such a blowout in the fourth quarter, it made it a lot easier to justify not having him out there. I'll be curious in a closer game if the Cards are able to stick with a reduced workload for J.J. Watt the way they've talked about it. It was easy to do in week one. You were beaten up on the Tennessee Titans, and it was very easy to sit him and not play him very much in the fourth quarter. Are they able to stick with that plan if it's a closer game on Sunday? We'll find out on Sunday.
Listen, there were a lot of people that were kind of had mixed reviews on the two-year, $28 million deal. I just went back to look at, you know, to look at one, and it was the Athletic gave it a C-. Says Watt can still play. He was double teamed at the highest rate in the league last season. He was double teamed 30% of the time. 30% of the time he got double teamed. He's not going to see 30% double teams with Chandler Jones here. But he did have 5 sacks and he did have 17 quarterback hits, which is big. But it says it's fair to question how the Cardinals are allocating their resources. They ranked 19th in offensive efficiency last season. If they don't find an answer on offense, well, I think they did find an answer on offense. I mean, with Rondale Moore and with Connor and with AJ Green. But it said, you know, they thought it was a little bit of a risk for them to give him that contract. So there were some people that liked it and gave it a B. Some people gave it a C. Not everybody was on board with the J.J. Watt signing.
Yeah, but as we talked about going into that game and coming out of that game, if that's the kind of pressure, now maybe not to the tune of, you know, 6 sacks as a team and 5 from one dude, but if that's the kind of pressure that J.J. Watt and that front 7 are going to put on opposing quarterbacks every single week, I mean, it will pay dividends. It might not result in great individual stats for J.J. Watt, but so what? I mean, that's not a position where, I mean, yes, you want him individually to flourish, but he doesn't have to as long as a unit they're doing what they need to do to help make that defense be everything it can be. It doesn't necessarily have to be about individual stats for J.J. Watt at this point.
No, and it's, like I said, the sack thing is one. If he's in the backfield and he's disrupting and he's getting quarterback hits, he had 17 quarterback hits last year. 17. He was getting, and he was double-teamed 30% of the time.
Yeah.
So I think that that's a big thing. Like, he's, you know, he's not going to be double-teamed as much. I still think he's going to get those quarterback hits. Look, the key thing and why people didn't like it, he missed 32 games over like a 3 or 4 year period because he was hurt a whole bunch of times. Now, last year he played every game, but he missed a lot of games because of injuries prior to that. The key is just for him staying healthy. I think he'll be productive.
Well, text the word Red Sea right now to 620-620. Then listen for your name tomorrow at 7:35 a.m., 1:35 p.m., and then with us on Burns and Gambo at 3:35, you could win a pair of tickets to see the Cardinals home opener this Sunday against the Vikings. Plus, we're going to have a grand prize winner who will score an autographed Kyler Murray jersey. Again, text Red C to 620-620. DeAndre Hopkins, one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. And for Patrick Peterson, former teammate of DeAndre Hopkins, his return to Arizona is this weekend, and he's looking forward to the matchup. You'll hear from P2 next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Patrick Peterson.
Let's just get this game over with. And I out of sight, out of mind after this. I mean, no, really. I mean, we played the podcast and everything leading up to the game.
Yep.
And then he'll have the game and we'll judge him. And then he'll have his podcast and we'll talk about what he said. And then, you know, after that, you're just looking at him like, to me, I want to get to the point where you look at Patrick Peterson the way you look at Hassan Reddick. And I know they're different because he played here for a long time and everything. But I just want to, the only reason why he's been in the forefront of everything is because they were playing the Cardinals. They're playing the Cardinals. and he's been very outspoken about it.
Yeah.
So, but once you get past this game, I don't know that I'm going to have many eyes on how Patrick Peterson is playing with the Vikings. Maybe a little bit here and there, but not a whole lot.
I think a little bit, like everything else, it will depend on how well the Cardinals are doing. I mean, you said that at the very beginning of the show at 2 o'clock when we were talking about this is the first home game for the Cardinals with no Larry Fitzgerald since 2003. And the thing that makes you not think about that is the team success. The thing that makes you conveniently ignore that this is the first home game without Fitz is the fact that they clobbered the Tennessee Titans, and we're all very excited about what this team could be. I don't care that much about Fitz not being here if this is what it's going to be like. I don't care that much about the return of Patrick Peterson. I'm more focused on the success of them
yes.
as opposed to the angles of this guy's here, this guy's not, this guy's making his return, whatever. Will I be curious how Patrick Peterson does over the course? Of course, naturally, because he's a guy who he's a diva. He's a diva cornerback. He really believes in himself. He talks a mean game, and I want to see if he can back that up. He kind of gambled on himself with a one-year contract. I don't think he still has game like that anymore. I think his days of being a number one corner in this league are long, long gone. I will be kind of curious to follow him over the course of the season to see if I'm right, to see if he can rediscover what made him great in Minnesota or not.
I think in some ways that's not really that, like a gambling on yourself is when somebody's offering you a multi-year deal and it's not for the amount of money you want, so you take a one-year deal for less. He had no options. Nobody wanted to sign him to a multi-year
deal. Which is an even further reflection of how far he had fallen off. Right, which even further emphasizes that the guy's just not the same guy that he was.
No,
when he was, and we look, it's not a surprise to us. It's not a surprise to anybody who's been watching Cardinals football for the last couple of years. We've all seen the decline. We've all experienced it. We all know. Wasn't a surprise to me at all that he didn't have any multi-year deals waiting for him. He spoke today. He's trying to treat this game like any other game.
No, not at all, because. Naturality, it is another game. I have to go out there and be at my best for my team. I have to go out there and be dialed in for 60 minutes, not allowing any big plays, not allowing catches, doing whatever I need to do to make sure, you know, I slow my guy don't show up on the stat sheet. You know, so that's my main focus. That's my main goal going into this week. And I'm working towards that all week this week.
And if his guy is DeAndre Hopkins.
One is his catch, him catching the ball. It's very, you know, you rarely see D-Hop drop any passes. You know, he catch all of the contested catches out of throws. You know, so you just have to make those windows a little bit tighter. You know, be a little bit tighter to coverage. You know, just try to, you know, as best as you can, just try to make his day a living hell. You know, but D-Hop is one of those receivers that invites the physicality of the receiver of the DB. You know, so and that's kind of how I play my game as well. I want to be physical with the receivers and kind of get in their head and have them thinking about me a little bit more. But D-Hop is different. You know, he invites that. So it's going to be a little bit of a chess match whenever I have my opportunities to go up against him. Like I said, it should be a fun game. It should be a fun matchup whenever we do have opportunity to match up. Should be an electrifying game that we, you know, looking to prepare for and hopefully get a dub.
And like I said to you, if I'm Patrick Peterson, I'm going to Mike Zimmer. I want him.
Yeah.
I'm your best option. You know, I've got to take him out of the game. I've got to limit what he does. I want him. I'm not sitting there. I want to be in my little area right here. No, wherever he goes, I go. Wherever he goes, I'll go. I'll follow him the entire game. Let me shadow him. Let me be the guy. He should be asking for that to his head coach.
That's what made it interesting. At the tail end of that long soundbite, he did make a reference to, you know, when I'm covering DeAndre Hopkins, as if almost suggesting that it wouldn't be all of the time. When I'm out there covering him in those moments where I am covering him and how much he's on him. I mean, look, you're right. Look at the rest of that secondary. He is their best option of covering him. He is the one guy, if you're going to glue one guy on to DeAndre Hopkins, Patrick Peterson would be that guy. I'm telling you, I think that's a huge advantage for the Arizona Cardinals. I don't think Patrick Peterson is going to be able to cover DeAndre Hopkins very well. If that's really the, okay, there's your guy, go get him, go shut him down.
Just saying that he should want it. He should want that. Not, he shouldn't. And I don't think, listen, I think Patrick Peterson still has the utmost confidence in his ability.
Oh, sure
I don't
he
think he's
oh,
like,
yeah.
Hey, I can't cover that guy anymore. I mean, he's not pulling a Ryan Gosling in Remember the Titans. You know, put Petey in. I can't cover this guy.
Yeah, no.
I don't think he's coming to the sidelines telling Mike Zimmer to put somebody else on D-Hop because he can't cover him. I don't think he can either. I think that DeAndre Hopkins will get the better of him a lot more than Patrick Peterson gets the better of DeAndre Hopkins. But I still think he's got to be the one that has to say, I want that. I want that challenge.
I can play with Roosevelt, but I cannot play with these guys.
Yeah.
Papedian.
He's better.
Papedian, he's better.
You want him to take your spot? You go give it to him.
One of my favorite sports movies of all time. Such a great movie.
I still can't believe that's Ryan Gosling. It's just so...
Yeah, because the first time I ever saw him, he was in The Notebook. He's a lover. What? He was not a fighter? He was not a fighter. He was a lover.
It was just something the way you...
Oh, you could tell he wasn't a fighter based off of his DB skills.
Right, exactly. And remember the Titans, he wanted to put Petey in, so he's definitely not a fighter. So that's the only reason he could be in The Notebook, because he was a lover.
He's a lover. He's a pretty boy.
It's just the way you said lover, it made
he's
me
a
laugh.
Lover.
See, there, you did it again. Stop that.
The extra long L on lover.
Stop saying those... Stop that! Stop it! You are heretofore banned from saying that word that way for the rest of time for Burns and Gambo. Leather. Stop it.
Why? What is it?
I don't know. It just sounds...
Ryan Gosling. Yeah.
It just sounds... No, not Ryan. Not the Ryan Gosling part. The way you say lover just sounds weird. So don't do it again.
I'm trying not to.
Just say lover. That's it.
He was a lover.
Stop!
Burns, he's like cringing
seriously,
with fear.
It's so creepy, weird the way you say that. It's just,
Jeez, I didn't have to say it to you.
God help us all if you do. I mean,
I've called you a lover before.
just.
All right.
You're going to say it one more time, aren't you? You're not? You promise?
Papedian. Ryan, Patrick Peterson is not asking Mike Zimmer to put anybody else in.
No, he's not. He won't. But I don't think he can cover DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, but he's got to listen.
He's their best option.
He's got to rise up. Is it possible that Patrick Peterson has a good game? It's possible.
Oh, of course it is. Oh, yeah.
This guy's an 8-time Pro Bowl player. It's possible he has a good game. And
I'm sure
he's going to want to prove to this team that they made a mistake not re-signing him.
No doubt about it. An advantage in knowing the wide receivers or them knowing him?
At the end of the day, when you get out on the ball, on the football field, you know, we're just being ballers, you know. They have a lot of great receivers on that roster this year. Obviously, D-Hop is leading the way. A.J. Green has been an 11-year vet in this league. My draft mate, Christian Kirk, had a great game last week. You know, but at the end of the day, every defense has an assignment and a responsibility. You know, if we're able to do that to our full potential, you know, we'll be able to make it out of downs.
We'll see, and we'll see what kind of reaction he gets on Sunday. When we come back, every week, the Sun Devils have moved up the top 25 polls. Now they face their first real test of the season. How are they going to respond on Saturday night? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. And we haven't had a chance yet to bring up, so we welcome you back into the Burns and Gambo Show. Another injury for the San Francisco 49ers. Trey Greenlaw, their linebacker.
Wow.
Okay, it's just week one. So far they've lost Raheem Mostert and
Jason Verrett.
And now Drake Greenlaw.
He's out 6 to 8 weeks.
And that he might be out for both of their matchups against the Arizona Cardinals now.
Yeah.
The Cardinals play him twice, I think once in week like 5 and then again in week 9. So
core muscle procedure he's gonna have.
Yeah.
I mean, he's such a good player too. So he's one of those speed linebackers, man. He can go sideline to sideline type of guy. So he had 6 tackles against the Lions. That's a big loss for them. Like, that's a really big loss for them. He's such a good football player. So now, you know, you start to pile up, and you're not off to a good start with the injuries that they've had.
No, you're not. And if you're Kyle Shanahan, man, the work that you got to put in to kind of avoid that whole here we go again kind of mentality that can set in, because that team just got decimated by the injuries. And you can see week one already, starting running back, starting cornerback, starting linebacker, and you've got to work hard to keep that here-we-go-again mentality from settling in. So keep an eye on that. And I imagine tomorrow we'll preview a little bit some of the NFC West games this weekend as well. Take a look around the division, what San Francisco's doing, what Seattle's doing, what the Rams are doing. We'll also preview a little bit more ASU's big game against BYU.
It's a big game.
On Saturday. It's a huge game. It's a for a lot of different reasons, none more so important than we really don't know that much about ASU. They have not been tested, and there's this belief that this is the best roster they've had in maybe 20 years. If you don't beat BYU on a Saturday night, it's not the best roster you've had in the last 20 years. So it's very much a prove-it type moment for them to find out how good they are.
Yeah, listen, I don't think that they played uninspired football these 2 weeks. Like, they've gotten convincing wins, but man, they weren't easy wins. I mean, that UNLV game, and UNLV is garbage. I mean, that game was a one-score game late third quarter, like with a minute left before ASU finally decided to put them away. And they played uninspired football in the first half, and UNLV had these big long drives, and they scored points. Like, man, what is going on here? I think they'll get up for this BYU game. I think you've got no choice to get up for this game. You're playing a good opponent. You're playing an opponent that you could say, you know, you can look at UNLV, they've had one winning season in 20 years. You can look at the Southern Utah, and they're no good. You can look at BYU and say they've beaten Arizona, they've beaten Utah. Do you really want them to go 3-0 against the Pac-12? Come on. To start the season? Like, it's time to they know that this is a game for them that can establish them as a if you want to continue to climb up that ladder in the rankings.
Sure.
You want to go from 19 to top 15 and win the football game.
It's one of those games. I think it's not football player to football player that makes me the most nervous about this, because you've said it all day long, and I don't disagree with you. ASU is fundamentally more talented. They've got more talented football players than BYU.
More.
What concerns me is the environment. What concerns me is the where, not necessarily the what. Because the where is, if you watched even 5 minutes of that BYU-Utah game, that place was insane. That place was a nut house.
Now, it's a rivalry game. They hadn't beat them in the last nine times they played them.
Fair, and I was just going to say that.
Jacked up. They had just gotten in the Big 12. There was a lot to get excited about in Provo.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it was the Holy War. There's a lot of reasons for BYU, but now BYU fans, they're ranked. They want to go 3-0 against the Pac-12. There's this belief now in their team, especially when not a lot of people were expecting that much out of them. That has the potential to be a real raucous environment ASU is walking into. And I think the biggest thing would be, don't fall behind early. Because if you can take that crowd out early, if you can score early, make it quiet, then I think you minimize some of that a little bit. If you fall behind 7-3, 10-3, early in that game, you're going to fuel that crowd, and that place is going to be delirious on. So you got to avoid that if you're ASU, if you can.
Yeah, I just think that there's so much skill and talent. The defense hasn't, you know, they've got all these seniors on this defense. It's time to play that way. Okay, it's time to play that way. They've got all this speed on offense. You know, you've got three running backs. I think there's the ability here for them to take control of this game. I think they're going to win convincingly. I mean, I do. I think they're going to win convincingly. Now, if I'm wrong, then I think we kind of know what ASU is. They're not, you know, it's either you're a legitimate contender or you're not. If you lose this game on the road to BYU, yes, you can still win the Pac-12 South. Yes, you could.
You can still go to the Rose Bowl.
Still go to the Rose Bowl.
Absolutely.
But, man, nobody's going to believe that you're going to do that if you lose this game. You can still do it, but I don't think many people are going to believe that you're capable of doing it.
Well, and then the old, you know, kind of angles are going to start to rise up about this team, and people are going to want this. This was seen as their best shot. This whole season was seen as their best shot. Herm talking on Bickley and Murata on Monday, talking about playing BYU on the road.
Well, I think we felt going into the season that the two opponents we played early, we felt we were a better football team, and I think you can't deny that to the players. But now all of a sudden we're going to meet a team that has won a lot of games in two seasons. They have a lot of experience. They're playing in a venue that is a tough venue to win in. They beat Utah there this week. It's been about 11 years since they beat them there. And just looking at the crowd and the atmosphere, I've been there before as a coach with San Jose State team. It's a fun venue to play in, very loud, very vocal crowd. So this is what you want. as a football team. You want to go into a venue like this and you kind of figure out and find out where you're at.
In fact, he was recruited.
He was recruited by Lavelle Edwards. He was recruited by them. He didn't go. Actually played against them. I don't know if he brought this up, but he did 1 year with the Aztecs in 76. He faced BYU, and BYU won that game 8-0. He had two of BYU's I think he got two of the points, too, in the game, I think. But, you know, he started at safety, caught a forward lateral in the end zone that ended up resulting in a safety. So he did play against them once. He was recruited by Lavelle Edwards back in the early 70s and did play against them that one time.
We had Chris Cartman on the show earlier, and he, of course, he's the guy in charge of SunDevilSource.com. And he tweeted out, "My view of ASU's toughest to easiest remaining games, taking location, weather, travel, etc. into account. At UCLA, he's got as the toughest game for ASU on the schedule. At Utah, as the second toughest game on the schedule. He's got at BYU as the third toughest game on the schedule."
Okay.
I think just because of the location, yeah, because of the fact that it's there, not here, and that crowd is nuts.
Listen, I get it. I mean, they played well, right? I mean, they had three sacks over Arizona. I think they had another three in the last game against Utah. Their defense has been very good. I mean, you win that game. They stopped the Utah seven times on third down. They stopped them twice on fourth down. And now they've got a team that they think defensively can match up with anybody. ASU brings a little different element because of the speed. ASU brings a speed element that they may not see a team that plays this fast.
Maybe.
And that's what ASU has to take advantage of is their speed.
What, 16.5 points per game so far against the Pac-12 in the first two games? Yeah, they've played. Yeah, the BYU defense has played at a very high level. And look, let's be honest, they've done it against a better caliber of competition than ASU has. So that's something to be taken into account, too. I still think ASU wins. I don't think it's convincingly the way you suggest it will be. I still think they win this football game because I am a big believer that this ASU football team is one of the best they've had there in many, many years. I think the other thing to consider, too, is that Pac-12. And I haven't looked around. I don't think it's a great week of football for Pac-12 in terms of the schedule. This is obviously the premier game. Think about this conference so far, man. Everybody has either been completely humiliated or...
except UCLA.
Beaten a team... well, you didn't let me finish.
Oh.
Or beaten a team...
tried to jump the gun there.
Yeah, I know. That they weren't supposed to beat. Right? ASU is the only team that hasn't done one or the other. Every team in this conference has either been completely humiliated or they've beaten a team they weren't supposed to beat. With UCLA beating LSU, with Oregon beating Ohio State, everybody else has been humiliated. Washington's been humiliated by Montana. Stanford got humiliated by K-State. USC got humiliated by Stanford. I mean, on and on and on and on, right? ASU's the only team that doesn't fit into either one of those categories. They're the only team in the whole conference that hasn't either been completely humiliated or beaten someone they weren't supposed to.
True.
Where do they fit? Where are they in this conference compared to everybody else? We'll find out.
They weren't going to lose to UNLV or Southern Utah if they had played, you know, if they had brought out guys from played 20 years ago and put them out on the field. They didn't put themselves in a position with their schedule to have a big upset. But this game, I think we find out if ASU's for real. If they're for real, they'll beat BYU.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, he played all over the place. So did the other guy for the Arizona Cardinals. And it's that versatility that's a real strength for the team moving forward. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. All right, time for the games that we're going to watch tonight, brought to you by Vizzy Hard Seltzer, the only hard seltzer crafted with antioxidant and vitamin C. Proud sponsor of your Arizona Diamondbacks. Thursday Night Football. Giants are already up on a Washington 7-0, but the news is not good for New York. It was a touchdown run by Daniel Jones. It was left guard turned center Nick Gates. The card is out for him right now. They've got his leg in an air cast.
When those offensive linemen go down, they put their hand on their face, you kind of know.
Joe Buck just said on the NFL Network, "It's bad enough that we're not going to show it to you."
Oh, no.
I'm just reading that on Twitter right now.
Okay.
"It's bad enough that we are not going to show it to you again."
I don't want you to show it to me. I don't need to see those things.
Yeah.
I don't need to see them.
Yeah, Joe Judge is out there on the field. It's bad. So the Giants, obviously a devastating blow. They lead with about 6 minutes to go in the first quarter. The game just got underway. But they lost their center, Nick Gates, to some sort of a lower leg type injury. So he's out. That's what's on tonight. There are no Diamondbacks game tonight. There's baseball games around Major League Baseball, if you're so inclined. But Thursday night
Robbie
football.
Ray yesterday. I mean, can we talk about this for a second?
Yeah, please. Let's.
Just for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
For the life of me, I want to know, I want somebody to answer, why didn't he do this when he was here? Why? Why did Robbie Ray, the guy's going to win the Cy Young Award.
Yes, he is.
He struck out 13 batters, and you know how many he walked yesterday?
None.
The guy didn't walk a batter. He struck out 13. They won again. He threw 101 pitches yesterday. 95 were fastballs and sliders.
That's the key. Okay, he leads AL starters in ERA, strikeouts, innings, and quality starts. He's going to win the Cy Young Award. All right, I'm almost sure, especially if they make the postseason and they're one of the wild card teams right now. I saw this story this morning on MLB.com. Although Ray has thrown five pitch types this season, he is essentially a two-pitch guy. Four seamers and sliders, nearly 90%, like you mentioned. It hasn't always been that way, they write. As recently as 2019, Ray had four pitches that he threw 10% of the time or more. Last year, only three pitches hit that mark. Now it's down to two.
You got a good fastball, you got a good slider, stick with that.
Exactly. So why did that light not go on?
Why
did somebody from the Diamondbacks not turn that light on for Robbie Ray when he was here? Because he's obviously simplified his game, and it's worked. It's worked really well.
They're doing it with Luke Weaver.
Why did that not happen? And you're right, they're trying to do that.
They're doing it with Luke Weaver.
Those are the two pitches you throw. Throw those.
Right.
Don't mess with your curveball. Throw that.
Generational type talent that you could not harness when he was here. And now the Blue Jays have. He's going to get a gazillion dollars in free agency, Robbie Ray. I think he's on a one-year deal.
He was on a one-year deal, I think. Yeah.
I believe so. But I just it baffles my mind. Like, you had this guy, not for a year, not for 2 years. This isn't getting rid of somebody early like Max Scherzer. He was your guy forever, and you couldn't get him to be anything more than a five-inning pitcher that walked a lot of batters and struck out a lot of batters. And now, with him gone, a year after he's gone, he's put it all together, and he's one of the best pitchers in baseball.
And
why?
And the thing about it is,
why?
I wouldn't have even blamed the Diamondbacks up until about the last couple of weeks. I thought we knew everything there was to know about Robbie Ray. I'm like, yeah, okay, he can go. That's fine. No great loss, right? I mean, did you feel the sense of loss when they let Robbie Ray go, when they traded him to Toronto?
No, because what they were trading him was a five-inning pitcher.
Right.
I walked a lot of guys.
I didn't feel like they were making some giant catastrophic mistake. I thought, okay, you've had years and years and years. This is who he is.
But you got a guy that throws 95-plus, and you weren't able to figure out how to get the most out of him. And I think that sucks more than anything.
I agree.
Like, you should have, there's got to be an internal investigation into this. Why? Why is he so successful there and he wasn't here? What did we miss?
Yep.
What did we do? Because you can't tell me you did nothing wrong. Oh, they got him in Toronto and they figured him out. Why didn't you figure him out?
He is on a one-year deal worth $8 million.
He's going to get a gazillion dollars.
He is an unrestricted free agent next year at the age of 30.
Yeah.
Coming off a Cy Young Award-winning season.
4 years, a gazillion dollars. That's what he's going to get.
A gazillion.
A gazillion.
A gazillion.
Over four.
Yeah. I don't doubt it. Robbie Ray looked very, very good. So did Isaiah Simmons, if we're turning our attention back to the Arizona Cardinals, who, by the way, Isaiah Simmons is the special guest on the Big Red Rage as soon as we're done tonight at 6 o'clock with Wolf and Calvisi. If you want to hear more Cardinals talk, you can hear from Isaiah Simmons. He will be the special guest, and for good reason. Isaiah Simmons had a heck of a game against the Tennessee Titans, and in addition to that was, as we fully expected, absolutely all over the field for the Arizona Cardinals in that season opener against Tennessee.
Yeah, and one of the things which we talked about quite a bit is that he played some cornerback. Now, you lose Malcolm Butler, and you're saying, oh, what do we get? You got, who else is going to play corner? Where's your... Well, you got Isaiah. Isaiah Simmons played slot cornerback, 14 snaps. I believe he was
16 as a slot
16,
corner.
Excuse me.
16 as a slot corner, one as an outside cornerback.
Yep. So
yeah.
17 snaps as a cornerback. 16 in the slot, one as an outside guy. He's given him a little lift. I could play some corner for you. I could play some corner. So he's all over the field. 12 snaps as a defensive lineman, 29 in the box as a linebacker, 16 slot corner, one as an outside cornerback. So you've got his ability to come in there and help out that cornerback room, and he did a good job of it, as did the rest of the cornerbacks.
Yeah, he did. He really looked like a guy who was a top 10 pick in the draft. And that is such a huge development for them, because last year he didn't look like a guy who was – and you can understand why he didn't – all the reasons we've talked about. He didn't have a preseason. He didn't have an off season. He didn't have any of that stuff. And so it stunted his growth a little bit. This was always going to be a huge year for Isaiah Simmons to show that he was worthy of being the eighth pick in that draft a couple of years ago. It's just one game. So far through one game, that's exactly what he's done. He's shown that he was worthy of being a top 10 pick. He was phenomenal against the Titans.
Byron Murphy was great. Robert Alford was great. Marco Wilson, they were all good. Good to great, those guys. But now you throw in Isaiah to play some corner for you, and you've got it really just helps the whole cornerback room.
It certainly does. Big Red Rage with Isaiah Simmons is next. We're back tomorrow here on the Burns and Gambo Show. It's straight up 2 o'clock.
Have a great night, everyone.